Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, we invite you to go to our webpage, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Tell Them a Story when we come back. You know, in 1787, the writers of our Constitution put in this clause at Article 1, Section 10. It says, no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. That clause follows the biblical injunction on just weights and balances that we see in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. Now, private business is carried on in gold and silver coin, but public business is conducted in commercial paper. Commercial paper are things like stocks and bonds and Federal Reserve notes, credit cards, debt, and usury. Well, back in 1965, our Congress said that there is no difference in the value of gold and silver coin versus clad coin or currency. And you know, that's very true when we're dealing with banks, governments, and commercial industry. But out here in the real marketplace, there's a 7-to-1 difference in the purchasing power of that gold and silver over paper. And there's a 7-to-1 difference in the taxes that are due on that paper versus the gold and silver. Now, you know, God and our founding fathers did not give us gold and silver coin for no good purpose. They knew that as a matter of law, gold and silver coin was absolutely necessary for us to deal in order for us to establish our property rights. Well, neither did our Congress and politicians take our gold and silver coin away from us for no good reason. They knew, and they knew full well back in 1933, that in order to subjugate a free people, they must first take away their gold and silver coin in order to take away the people's right to property and to destroy those property rights. So if you and I intend to regain our rights, our duties, and our capacities, then we're going to have to first regain our property and property rights. And that's because property is the legal foundation for all of our liberties. So let me show you how to do that. That's in our business school, which is now on compact disc for adult homeschoolers. Now, if you'd like more information about our private business school, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first? That's the place to start. It doesn't cost you anything. And then you can evaluate it and see, well, is this for me or not? It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. And remember, it's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, and it's free of charge. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. And if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click onto the archives page and you can download that free general law CD package right there off of our website. There was a fellow by the name of Don Hewitt, and he was the executive producer of 60 Minutes. And one time, just before he died, he was asked, why is it that 60 Minutes is so popular and has been so successful for so long? And he said, the success of 60 Minutes is based upon Tell Them a Story. Tell Them a Story. And he went on to say, the first thing that a little child wants to hear is, tell me a story, Daddy. Tell me a story, Mommy. Read me a story. From the time we're little children, we seem to be infatuated, maybe even mesmerized, by stories like the story of Br'er Rabbit or the story of the goose that laid the golden egg. As we get older, we like to hear stories about Daddy in the war. My dad used to tell me war stories about not necessarily what he had experienced in the war, but what the old-timers had told him about stories from the war. These stories are very valuable in the educational process. When we hear a story, it tells us a moral, like the story of Br'er Rabbit and the Tar Baby, or the story of Br'er Rabbit making a dollar a minute. Those stories explain to us the fallacies of human nature. Human nature is governed by five motivators. And when you go to sales school or when you're studying psychology, we learn that human beings are motivated by vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. Five motivators. And everybody is motivated by those five motivators. And every decision that you make in life is based upon one or more of those five motivators. And every time you make a decision, knowing that gives you an edge when somebody is trying to persuade you, trying to beguile you, lie to you, cheat you, trick you. And by the same token, there's also the person who's trying to help you, trying to educate you, trying to promote you, trying to help you. And you're also motivated by these same motivators, vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. Now, which is doing which or what's doing what to who and how and why is what gives people an insight that we call wisdom. Have you ever noticed that there are people out there that just kind of sense that this guy is a scam artist, he's a liar, he's trying to bamboozle us? My Aunt Bessie never had that. She was as naive. I mean, that woman would believe anything you told her. She was a wonderful lady. She was just a sweet, nice Advent lady. But I mean, she was gullible. And that's not wisdom. That's gullibility. That's the exact opposite from what the Bible teaches or from what common sense and logic teaches. Now, as long as there was somebody there to protect her from herself, she was all right. Now, there are scam artists, there are sighting salesmen, there are cheats and thieves and robbers and liars, and they're just everywhere. And being able to identify them, being able to identify what it is that this guy is trying to do to you is very important to your overall scope or your overall well-being in life. So when you hear the story of Br'er Rabbit and the Tar Baby, it tells you something about vanity. You know, he walked up to the Tar Baby and he said, "Hey, howdy, good morning." And the Tar Baby didn't say anything. And then Br'er Rabbit said, "Did you hear what I said? Now you better talk to me. And if you don't talk to me, I'm going to punch you right in the nose." Now, that's precisely what his enemy, Br'er Fox, had in mind. He wanted to capture Br'er Rabbit, and he's too fast, and he couldn't get him. So he has to use Br'er Rabbit's vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear against him. So in the process of doing this, he beguiles Br'er Rabbit. Br'er Rabbit's actually beguiling himself. He punches the Tar Baby in the nose, and now he's caught. He's hung. He can't escape. He hits him again and again and again, and when he's all through, he's all wrapped up in the Tar Baby, Br'er Fox comes out and says, "Aha, caught you." Now, there's a moral to that story. You have to be able to control your vanity and your jealousy. If you can't control your emotions, if you can't look at the situation divine it or decide what's going on here, how's this working, then it works against you instead of working for you. Now, we all like these stories. Everybody is educated by a story. It's called the moral of the story. The goose that lays the golden egg. The guy got greedy. And he turned around and he killed the goose that laid the golden egg. Common sense would tell you, leave the goose alone, and every day it lays you a golden egg. If you kill the goose, you get 5 or 6 eggs, and then the goose is dead and never lays another egg, so you get 6. But if you left him alive, you could get an egg a day for a month. That'd be 30 eggs. You know, you learned a lesson when you heard that story, the goose that lays the golden egg. And that story has been in your subconscious mind from the time you heard it until right now when I reminded you of it. It's a guide for you. Don't get overly greedy. If you get overly greedy, you'll end up with a whole lot less. Now, there's two ways to educate people. Education is a process of telling people stories so that they can evaluate in their own minds and then arrive at a conclusion that will guide them for the rest of their lives. Stories that my daddy and my mama told me when I was a child are still with me today, you know, 50, 60, 70 years later. Those stories guide me. They direct me. They warn me. They inspire me. That's why you like stories, and you like to listen to a story, because it's going to educate you. You're going to be smarter when we finish this program than when we started. I guarantee it, because I'm going to tell you a story. Now, the opposite to the story is called indoctrination. Indoctrination triggers your vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear, and it's the basis of subjugation by memorization. So when we go to public school today, we don't go there to hear a story to inspire us, and we go there to listen to us to a process or program of memorization. Somebody comes in and they say, "We're going to read chapter so-and-so." We're not going to question the chapter. We're not going to ask, "Who said so? How do we know that?" We're not going to prove all things and hold fast that which is good. We are going to believe what we're told, because that's the process of memorization. And we're going to be tested on how well we memorized or how well we learned our lesson. So on Friday, we're going to have 50 questions, true and false, concerning that chapter. When we do that, we can present a chapter on history, and the history doesn't have to be true, accurate, or correct. We can present a story. We can present our side of things, let's say, in the Revolutionary War, or any other topic, but we'll just pick the Revolutionary War. And then we can skewer it. We can put a few lies in there. We can put a few misconceptions in there, and then we'll come back and we'll test this person, see how well he memorized these misconceptions. And we're going to discourage this fellow from asking questions like, "How do we know this is true?" or "Where is there a second or a third opinion? Where is there a corroborating witness at the mouth of 2 witnesses or 3 witnesses? And the results of this are demonstrated around us. The kamikaze pilot of World War II was not educated. He was indoctrinated. The Muslim terrorist who commits suicide, blows himself up, and kills a bunch of people, he's not educated. He's indoctrinated. He's indoctrinated so well, many of these people have memorized the whole Quran. They can sit there and regurgitate. They can just sit there and recite from memory. I remember when I went to catechism, they taught us to recite from memory Bible verses, and I recited and learned many Bible verses, but I never learned what they meant, and I never learned what the vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear element to those memorized verses had to do with the real world or how the real world worked. Now, the Bible is a little different breed of cat. It's a story of education. It's a book of education, and it tells stories. It tells stories like David and Goliath and Joshua's long day, and it has parables in it, instruction. It tells a story. So I'm going to start off here by telling you two stories, and we're going to come to the end of our stories, and I'm going to show you how to go out and get a job. The unemployment rate just ticked up to 9.9%, and at the very same time, our government came back and said, and at the same time, unemployment went up 0.2% last month, we added 260,000 jobs. That's an oxymoron. That's preposterous on its face. If you added 260,000 jobs, the unemployment rate would go down. It wouldn't go up. If the unemployment rate went up, well, then it's because there's more people unemployed, not more people employed. But that's what they told us on the mainstream news, and I saw that from Brian Williams. Boys and girls, if you can't believe Brian Williams, who can you believe? Now, that's indoctrination. That doesn't have anything to do with reality. Being able to put two and two together and think for yourself is a very important element in this thing called education. Indoctrination doesn't require any thinking on your part. It's easy. Everybody does it. It's a part and parcel with the program. And if I don't submit to this indoctrination, I'm going to be ostracized. And I don't want to be ostracized. And that's because I'm fearful of being by myself. I feel more comfortable being absorbed into the group. So here's story number one. My uncle Lyle was unemployed back in the 1930s, and he needed a job. And the biggest employer in Humboldt County, California, was Pacific Lumber Company. So he went down to Pacific Lumber Company to get a job. They had about 600 employees, 7 head rigs. They had jobs in the woods, they had jobs in the mill. It was the biggest redwood mill in the world. When he got there, he noticed that there was a long line of about 100 people who were lined up to put in their applications for jobs there at the employment office. Now, there's 600 employees here, and they said that about 6 employees would change their jobs every week. They would die, they would quit, they would be fired. So that's about 1 employee per day. They work 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday in those days. So there's 100 people standing in line. Now, these people are standing in line every day. So 600 people are standing in line 6 days a week, putting in their applications. And at the end of the week, 6 people are going to receive a job. That means you have a 1% chance of getting a job. Out of 100 people standing in line, one of them is going to get a job, and the other 99 are going to be disappointed. So my Uncle Lyle looked at that, and he said, you know, the odds aren't very good. All of these people standing in line are mill workers. They're all just as competent and qualified as I am. Now, my Uncle Lyle was skilled help. He knew what he was doing around the mill. He could do just about anything. He was an old lumberman. He was an old logger. He knew the ropes. But then there's lots of other people out there that he's competing against, and they all have the same skills and abilities. In fact, probably a lot of them have better skills and abilities. And my Uncle Lyle needs a job just like all the rest of them. So he evaluates the circumstance, and he says, this is not a very good way for me to get a job, standing in line and competing against 100 people for the one job that's going to be available today. Only one of us is going to be hired. Am I going to be that lucky person, or will I more likely be one of the 99 that ends up without a job? Now, that's the same dilemma that you find yourself in today. You got 9.9 million people unemployed. That's official. The real number is more like about 15 to 18 million people who are unemployed out of about 100 million people in the workforce. It's about 18 to 22%, depending upon who's giving you the numbers. But it's more than the 10% that they're telling you about. It's more like twice that many. And in any event, there's other people out there that are just as skilled as you are for whatever job you're looking for. So is there some other way that we could employ to guarantee that we're going to get a job? And the answer to that is absolutely. All right, now let's listen to the story. So my Uncle Lyle goes right straight off into the lumber yard. He doesn't stand in line. He just walks right out into the yard. He finds a guy out there, and he says, who's the foreman here? And he says, well, it's Ben Johnson. Well, where is Ben Johnson? He said, well, you know, walk down here and walk over there, and you'll find Ben Johnson out there at the yard office. And so he trots on over to the yard office, and sure enough, he finds Ben Johnson. And he says, he just announces to the foreman, he said, I've been sent out from the office to go to work. What do you want me to do? Now, Johnson hasn't requested anybody from the office. And he says, what's your name? And my uncle says, I'm Lyle Stanley. And then he said, what do you do? And he says, I can do just about anything. You know, I can sort lumber, and I can run the stacker, I can run the carrier, I can run machinery, I can run the crane, I can sticker lumber, you know, I can sort, I can pull chain, you know, whatever you want. And so the guy says, well, okay, well, follow me. And he went over, and there was a pile of lumber spilled over on the ground. The carrier knocked one over and stuff. He said, pick this load up. So my Uncle Lyle went right to work on the load. Load, that's a unit of lumber. It spilled on the ground. He throws two chocks down next to it. He starts going, picking it up. Now, a unit of lumber has anywhere from 3,000 to 5,000 board feet of lumber in it, and it takes about 30 to 45 minutes to pick one up and to move all the boards that are in it. I don't know what size boards. You know, if you're moving one by fours, it's going to take a lot longer than if you're moving two by twelves, but he picks up this unit of lumber in about 20 minutes. I mean, he got after it, and he picked it up. He comes back to Johnson. He says, all right, I'm done. What's next? So Johnson comes over, and he says, well, that's a pretty good-looking stack you got there. He says, now, I want you to restack that pile of lumber right next to it. My Uncle Lyle says, okay, get right after it. About 20 minutes later, he finishes that, and my Uncle Lyle comes back. He says, okay, that's done. What do you want me to do next? And he said, I want you to move that pile of lumber, and I want you to restack it where it was. Uncle Lyle goes back. He restacks it. Takes about 20 minutes. He restacked and stacked that same pile of boards all day long. That's all he did for the whole day. He took the pile of boards and stacked here in this pile, and he stacked it over here to the left. He took the pile of boards on the left. He restacked it on the right. He took the pile of boards on the right. He restacked it on the left. Now, if he could do that every 20 minutes, just to give you an idea, now in those days they worked 12 hours a day. It's back in Depression years. The 8-hour day hadn't been invented yet. Now, I don't know what time of day he started to work. It could have been 10 o'clock in the morning, but they worked from 6 in the morning till 6 at night. That was a day's work. So he's going to work from 10 in the morning till 6 at night, so he's going to work at least 8 hours. 8 hours. So if you could restack that pile of lumber in 20 minutes, and you could do that 3 times in an hour, and you did that for 8 hours, it would be 24 times. So my Uncle Lyle restacked the same pile of boards back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, about 20 times. That's all he did for the whole day. When my Uncle Lyle told me that story, I was probably 10 years old, and I said, well, that was really stupid. That was really dumb. Why, I would have quit. I'd have told him where he could take that job. And then my Uncle Lyle looked at me kind of sternly, and he said, why? And he said, well, because, I said to him, I said, well, because stacking the same pile of boards back and forth, it was stupid. And my Uncle Lyle said, what was stupid about it? And I said, because it didn't accomplish anything. And then he said, oh, yeah, it did. It accomplished the boss's goal. Now, I'm just a little kid. I'm about 10 years old. Well, what did it accomplish? He said, it demonstrated to the boss that I was one of the best workers he had ever seen, that I could restack and stack a pile of boards every 20 minutes. That's faster than normal. And furthermore, that I could do it for the whole day. And then secondly, I didn't question the boss. I did what I was told. So he saw that here's an employee that can do what he's told, shut his mouth, and that he can do it as fast as or faster than anybody else there. It demonstrated to the boss that I was the best worker in the yard. And that's what I needed to do. I needed to show the boss that I'm worth hiring. And I said, but you didn't even know how much you were going to get paid. Remember, I'm hiring myself a job. It's up to the boss to determine what my value is, and he will pay me whatever he thinks I'm worth. It's not for me to determine how much he's going to pay me. It's for the boss to determine how much I'm worth, and he will pay me everything that I'm worth. Now, that's the lesson. Now, let me finish the story by telling you how it came out. My Uncle Lyle now remembers out here working in the yard. The next day he shows up at 6 o'clock in the morning. He works all day. He doesn't pile the same pile of boards back and forth. He's out doing the regular mill work. But he's out there, remember, without any authorization from the office. He's never been hired by anybody. Nobody knows he's out there working except Ben Johnson and Uncle Lyle. And he's out there just working away, doing everything that employees are supposed to do. And he's spending his time out there 12 hours a day. Now, day after day goes by. Now, in those days, they used to pay every 2 weeks at Pacific Lumber Company, twice a month. So at the end of 2 weeks, on Saturday night when they finished up, you go by the office, and they would give you your pay envelope. They paid in cash. They didn't pay with checks. So you got an envelope, and in the envelope would have your money in it. And in those days, they paid you about I don't know if it was $1 a day or $2 a day, something like that. They paid by the hour. And you were working for, I don't know, 40 cents an hour or something like that. So Uncle Lyle got in line just like everybody else. And when he got up to the paymaster, he said, Lyle Stanley. And the guy looks through the envelopes and he says, I don't have an envelope here for you, Lyle. And he said, where do you work? And he said, I work out in the yard with Ben Johnson. He said, well, there's some kind of a screw up here. You better talk to Ben on Monday morning and have him come over and straighten this out for you. So my Uncle Lyle said, thank you very much. And he walked off on Monday morning. And you know, he's working away there. And about 10 o'clock when the boss comes by, he mentions to the boss, Ben Johnson, he says, by the way, Ben, I went over Saturday to get my pay, and they did not have a pay envelope for me. And the paymaster suggested that you go over and straighten that out, if you would, I'd appreciate it. And so Ben says to Lyle, you bet I will, Lyle. I'll go right over and take care of it. Now, Lyle has demonstrated, my Uncle Lyle has demonstrated, he's the fastest and best worker in the yard. Remember, he's there to prove his value. He's there to prove that he's making the company money. He's a valuable employee. For every dollar you're paying him, he's making $2 or $3 for the company. He's not leaning on a shovel. He is a productive, profitable employee. We see an example of that in the Bible. It's called the parable of the unprofitable servant. So Ben goes over and says, well, what's the problem? Well, we don't know what the conversation was like over there in the office, the head office, but he came back with an application, and he said, something happened, Lyle. Your application got lost. Here, fill out the application. Now, remember, every day there's 100 people standing in line filling out these applications. My Uncle Lyle never spent a minute standing in line, never filled out an application. Now, I know you're going to say, well, that's really deceptive. Well, of course it is. If you're going to show somebody that you are the best employee that they've got, then you got to get your butt out there and demonstrate it. You're not showing anybody anything by showing them a resume, by writing your name on pieces of paper and telling them all the lies about what you've done in the past. What counts is, let me see what you can do, boy. I don't want to know what you're telling me. Do it. Show me. My Uncle Lyle's been out there now for 2 weeks, or close to it. He's demonstrated that there isn't anybody out here that can pile more boards, operate better, operate machinery better than I can. This is on-the-job performance. And the boss is impressed by what he sees. He doesn't want to lose. This guy makes money. This guy does something. He ain't leaning on a shovel. He ain't standing around wondering about what the hell to do next. My Uncle Lyle pointed out, he said, you know, when you finish a job and the boss ain't around, you need to be keeping your eyes and ears open so that you can see what needs to be done. A good employee doesn't have to go to the boss and say, what do I do next? A good employee just goes on to whatever's standing around or whatever's around, and he does it because he can see that that needs to be done, and he goes and does it without being told. My dad used to try to get me to do that. He'd say, now, you can see that the garbage is full. You can see that the garbage needs to be taken out. You don't have to be told to take the garbage out when you see the can is full. When you see that the dog bowl is empty, you can see that it needs to be refilled. When your bed isn't made, you can see that it needs to be made. When there's dirty dishes in the sink, you can see they need to be washed. You don't have to be told, wash the dishes, take out the garbage, make your bed and feed the dog. You can see that. Now go do it. Well, that's what a profitable employee would do. Now here in America, we don't have profitable employees. We have people that are indoctrinated. They're indoctrinated by unions. They're indoctrinated by schools. We don't do anything that we're not told. Well, as a result of that, when there's tough times, you people end up being unemployed. And I've never been unemployed a day in my life, and if I lived to be 110, I never would be. I'd go hire myself a job. Now, Uncle Lyle filled out the papers, and then the next week he went over there, and he got paid just like everybody else. That's what we call hiring ourselves a job. Well, hang on, I've got to give you a mid-course reminder here, and then we'll come back and I'll tell you another story. A story that we can become educated from, we can learn from, and then we can go out and get a job. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk in the law. Our website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the Law School and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. Click on to the archives page, and that free general law CD package is there on the archives page, and you can download it right there. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements, these recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about telling a story. Sometimes I call this segment on my program here story time, and when I tell these stories, I'm not here to entertain, although stories are entertaining. Remember, the Law Hour is a public service for the purpose of educating people, particularly Americans and Australians and you people in South Africa and Australia, to the concepts of education versus indoctrination, and how can this help Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife? We don't need to be concerned about the upper crust. Hell, those guys can take care of themselves. They can steal, lie, cheat, and screw people over, and they'll get by quite nicely. But those people that are being lied to, cheated, screwed, blued, and tattooed sometimes need a hand up, and oftentimes they don't know how. So a story tells you how. In the Reader's Digest, there's a segment that appears from time to time. It's called Drama in Real Life. And I read drama in real life because it's educational. It's entertaining, but it's also educational because I imagine in my own mind, I say, oh my God, what would I do if I was in that circumstance? It could be a guy who's flying his airplane over the Sierras and he crashes and he's up in the snow, he's got a broken leg, he's by himself. Now he survives this, but how did he do that? How did he get down from 13,000 feet? How did he save himself? Or the guy that cut himself with a chainsaw and he was bleeding bad and he was out in the woods by himself and he knew that he was going to black out from loss of blood, but he had to walk a mile and a half. You know, each one of these success stories, when you read the story, when somebody tells the story to you, I have never cut myself. I've never crashed an airplane at the 13,000-foot level, but I'm prepared if it ever happens. I could run my car off the road. I don't have to crash an airplane. There could be all kinds of different ways that I could end up at the 13,000-foot level over Wolf Creek Pass and need to save myself. And now, because I heard that story, I'm better prepared to do that. If a rattlesnake bites me, do I know what to do? Yep, I know exactly what to do. That's because where you get bit by the rattlesnake is not going to be where you can pick up the phone and call 911 and then go to the ER. When you get bit by the rattlesnake, you're going to be out here somewhere in the mountains where there's no communications, where you're there by yourself, and you got to solve this problem for, of, and by yourself. Have you ever been instructed in what to do when you get snake bit? Well, it would be a good idea to do that. I've never been snake bit, as old as I am. No snake's ever bit me. I've always been smart enough to see the snake before he saw me. But, you know, my luck may run out one day, and I might have to fend for myself. So let me tell you a story about hiring yourself a job. I'm a young fellow, about 23 years old. I live in the Alameda Apartments. I would like to get a job managing the Alameda Apartments. But I don't know the owner. I've never done this before in my life. And I happen to know the manager, and when I see the manager and pay my rent, I talk to him. One day I asked him, I said, I would like to take your job as the manager here when you leave, because I knew that he was saving his money from his rent-free. He'd been there for 2 years. He's not paying any rent. He gets rent free. Then every month, he's saving his $150 a month for a down payment on a house so he can move to Hayward. And so I knew that he was doing, and I knew that he was going to leave there. And I said, would you put in a word for me? Would you introduce me to the owner? Because when you give him notice to quit, he's going to have to hire somebody. And if you would tell him that the guy in apartment number one would like to take my place, and I know the guy, and I think he'll make a good manager, that would give me an introduction to the manager. So we used to go hunting together. I did with the manager, and I was pretty good buddies with him. And sure enough, when he got ready to quit, he told the owner, whose name was Greg Dixon, and he was a real estate man, and his main business was buying, selling, and trading, but he had a few apartment houses. This is one of them. And this one was kind of run down. And so I got the word to go get interviewed. My wife and I went down. We were interviewed, and I told him that I was very excited about the job, that I wanted to learn how to renovate. I wanted to learn the real estate business. I was young, and he was impressed by my enthusiasm. Enthusiasm. You know, do you want to do this job? Are you here because you want to be here, or are you just taking this job because, well, I'm unemployed, and I don't have anything else to do, and I'm a college professor, and I really don't want to manage this apartment building, but I have to do something here because I can't pay my rent. What in the hell do I want to hire a guy like that for? The guy doesn't want to be here. He's not going to succeed at this because he's not enthused. He really doesn't want to work here. He'll do it. Now, but it's begrudgingly. Now, here's the secret to your success. If you want to work, if you like the work that you're doing, you'll get up every day and you'll be enthused about it because you like what you're doing. I get up every day and I like my job. I like what I do. And I do it every day. And sometimes I work late into the night. Sometimes I prepare these programs for hours and hours, and I'm sitting here doing research, and I'll get excited, and I'll say, Dirk, go up and get me some information off the net. Tell me about this, that, and another thing, so I can relay that information. Give me the facts on this. Let me see what's going on here. And now, if I had to drag myself down here and force myself to do this, it wouldn't be exciting. It wouldn't be interesting. You wouldn't want to listen to me, and I wouldn't want to do this, and I'd want to go do something else. So you want to get involved in something that you want to do. If you're a college professor and you want to go drive cab, is it because you want to meet people, you want the tips, you want to make money, you want to figure out how can I invent cab driving in a new area? Well, why don't we get into something that we want to do? Why don't you hire yourself a job someplace where you want to do something? I wanted to manage this building. I wanted to learn how this thing is done. Well, Mr. Dixon hired me. Now, my job is to collect the rent, deposit it in the bank, and there's certain rote things I need to do, take out the garbage and clean up the grounds, mow the grass, and all that. I got all that down pat. I knew exactly what to do. One of the tenants moved out, and I had a vacant apartment. Now, I'm also the handyman, and I'm supposed to make repairs and paint patches on the walls, and if there's a hole in the wall, fix it, and one thing and another. And when this guy moved out, I took a look at the apartment, and it was pretty dingy. It needed to be painted. And the whole thing, you know, just kind of, so we got in there, and we cleaned it up, and I repainted the whole apartment. I mean, I worked my heart out over the weekend, so that I didn't spend a lot of time on it. Then, when it was time to rent it, I raised the rent by $30 a month. $30 a month. That apartment was so dingy and so poor, and it was, you know, it just wasn't very good. And I'd never renovated an apartment before, and I didn't do a whole lot to it, but I did paint it top to bottom. My wife got in there with me. The two of us, we just worked our hearts out. And I mean, we worked long hours. I was probably working 18 hours a day there for about 3 days. We got that thing painted up. We cleaned it. It was spick and span. So that when we started showing it, when we raised the rent by $30 a month, the tenant that moved in there was just happy as a clam at high tide. That apartment was perfect, spotless, repainted. Now, there's a lot more that could have been done that we didn't do, but I didn't know in those days. That was my very first job I'd ever done, very first renovation. It was apartment 4, first floor. Now, when I raised the rent by $30 a month, let me show you how much money I made my boss. It raised the value of the building by 30 times 7. That's right. So $30 a month, take 30 times 12 times 7, it raised the value of the building by $2,500. The building was worth $80,000, now it's worth $82,520. And that's because there's a formula here. Now, I didn't know anything about that formula. Now, look what I did for the boss. He hired me. I went in there, renovated the apartment, raised the rent by $30, and tacked on $2,500 worth of value. I did that in the very first month I was there. Now, how much did the boss pay me? He gave me a free apartment. But that was programmed in. The free apartment and the work that I did there was already programmed in. This was over and above. I didn't get paid a dime for this extra work. But I did it anyway, just like my Uncle Lyle. Why? Because I'm hiring myself a job. And did it pay? Oh, God, it paid me in spades. Because Greg Dixon sold that building to the next guy, whose name was Peter Watt. Watt was the property manager for a pretty good size outfit that did business there in the Bay Area, in the East Bay Area. And ordinarily, Watt told me later, he said, we just fire the manager when we buy a building. But because Dixon told me that you renovated that apartment and added that value to the building, that's our business. And I said, gee, maybe this guy will work. And so he decided to keep me on. He interviewed me, and he said, yeah, I'm going to keep you on. And then later he said, we'd like to hire you as an independent contractor, and we would like you to do all of our renovation work in all of our buildings. We'd like you to manage that. My total experience was to renovate one apartment. Now, by the time Watt had taken over, I did two more, so I actually had three apartments renovated under my belt. And he said, I'll teach you how to renovate apartments. Now, I've got an instructor. Watt taught me how to renovate apartments. And I was so amateurish, you know, when I did my first apartment, second and third apartment. And I shut my mouth. I listened to the pro. He showed me how to do it. Now I got good at it. I went on to run a company called the Gordon Building Maintenance Company, and I'll tell you what the success rate was. I was working as a machinist, a mechanic and machinist at International Harvester. I made $3.28 an hour. Now, $3.28, that was top pay back in 1964, 5, 6, you know, long in there. I'm getting top union pay. But $3.28 an hour, let's just multiply it out, 3.28 times 40, is $131 a week. Now, in addition to that $131 a week times 4.3 is $564 a month gross, and now I got to pay my taxes out of that, pay the rent and everything else. The very first month that I went to work as an independent contractor, I gave up my $564 a month. And I was fearful. Remember vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. I was fearful. I'm giving up unemployment insurance, workman's compensation, 2 weeks a year, paid vacation. I'm giving up all these benefits, the safety net, as the government officials tell you. We've given you all this safety net. The safety net out there, boys and girls, is what's holding you people back. That's why you can't produce. That's why you can't succeed in life. You're fearful. Fear. I'm afraid. And that's what I was. See, I've been indoctrinated too. Now, I had to overcome my fear, so I quit my job. Now, remember, this new job as an independent contractor, I don't have any benefits. I don't have any safety net. All I've got is my work, and if I work, I get paid. But now I'm going to get paid $12 an hour now. I'm going to go from $3 an hour to 12, four times more money. 90 days later, I'm making $1,700 a month, working out of the back of a 1957 Ford station wagon that burned a quart of oil a day, got a ladder and a box of tools, working by myself. And by the end of the year, I had 7 employees and 2 service trucks. By the end of the second year, I had 14 employees and 7 service trucks. By the end of the second year, I was grossing $250,000 a year. Now, that's a pretty good business. That's a pretty good change, isn't it? From where we started at $3.28 an hour, now we go to $1,700. Now we go to $250,000. That's not too shabby, is it? Now, I've never gone back to work for wages from that day forward. I've been an independent contractor. I've been in real estate. I've done a number of businesses. But I'm not looking for a job. I don't need employment. I've hired myself a job several times. And that's exactly what a self-employed businessman does. He's constantly hiring himself jobs. He's selling himself, and he's selling jobs constantly. Now, there's no such thing as unemployment. Let me make an announcement to you. Unemployment doesn't exist. It's a figment of your imagination. It's a part of your indoctrination program. If it were true that there was unemployment out there anywhere in the world, it would say all of the work has been done. There's no more work to do. That's preposterous. There is no end to work. You're driving a car right now, aren't you? Just take a look at your car. Let's say that you're driving a 1995 Chevy. Are you satisfied with a 95 Chevy, or would you like to have a 2000 or a 2005? I don't care who you are, or what you do, or where you live. You would like to have a newer car, a bigger car, a better car. And the reason that you don't is because you don't know how to make a bigger, better car. You don't know how to earn the money to buy one. There is no end to the desire of human beings to have an automobile. All right, now take a look at your house. I don't care where you live. Would you like to have a bigger house? And would you like to have a house that's in a different location? I don't care who you are or where you are. You want a bigger, better house in a better neighborhood and a better location. If you're a farmer, you want a bigger, better farm, or you want one that's located in a better location. If you've got 50 cows, you want 75. If you've got 75, you want 150. Those are the natural desires that every human being has in life. Every one of us, all 6 billion people on this planet, want a bigger car, they want a bigger, better house, they want something bigger and better. That's what we call demand, and everybody's got demand. Now, we have to go out and work for it, and we have to create and produce it. And in order for you to work and create and produce, you have to have an environment whereby you can produce. So my Uncle Lyle went out to the environment where he could produce, and he demonstrated his production. And that's what I did with Greg Dixon. I went out and demonstrated my production. And by the way, Mr. Dixon paid me for those apartments. He didn't just write me a check and say, here's what I owe you, but he recommended me to the next guy. He moved my career to the next level. If it hadn't been for him, I would have been fired. And that's because Watt told me they had never kept. I was the first one, and I think I was the only apartment manager that they ever kept in the organization. And he said to me, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. And these people, when you hire them, they're wedded to the old management and the way they've always done things in the past, and they can't learn something new. He said, you were an exception. You wanted to learn. You wanted to renovate apartments. You wanted to learn how to manage. You wanted to learn real estate. And Watt wanted to teach me. Now, let me tell you something else. Anytime you find an old man with gray hair, if you'll stop and mine that old man, he'll stop and he will teach you what he knows. You young people out there don't know how to mine the old people. Old people are very reserved. They will not tell you jack diddly squat unless you ask. And if you've got the gumption to walk up to the old man and say, would you teach me that? Would you show me how to do that? I'd like to learn how to do that. I learned from my Uncle Lyle, my dad, Uncle Buster, how to mine that information, generate that interest, so that the employer would hire you. I have hired myself jobs, employments, and sold jobs so many times. I could sit here and tell you story after story after story, and that's what I'm going to do this week in story time. I'm going to tell you some stories. And every story that I tell you is going to teach you a life's lesson, a lesson that we use in the real world out on the street. Boys and girls, I am an employer. I know exactly what every employer wants out of his employees. And now I'm going to tell you what that employer wants. And if you'll walk up and give that to that employer, he will hire you. Not all of the work has been done. But every employer has to make a profit. Profit is the purpose for business. Business does not have any other reason for existence than profit. If you believe that General Electric exists to hire people, to produce electric motors, to make the world safe for democracy, you've got your head up the wrong end. General Motors, General Electric, George Gordon only exist in their business to make profit. So the employee, when he comes into the organization, has to make profit on day one for that company. Now I'm going to show you people how to do that. I'm going to tell you some stories, real life stories, so that you can end unemployment. I don't care if the unemployment rate hits 75%. I will work every single day. I will never miss a day's work, no matter what the unemployment rate is. And that's simply because all the work hasn't been done yet, and I'm going to go out and find what needs to be done, and I'm going to go do it because I can see what needs to be done. And Henry Kaiser put that onto his cement trucks. Now write this down. I'm going to show you a very important point here. It says, find a need and fill it. So on one side of the barrel, it said, find a need. And then as the barrel rolled over, it says, and fill it, which is all my dad ever told me when I was a little tyke. He said, you can see that the garbage needs to be emptied. You can see that there's dirty dishes in the sink that need to be washed. You can see that your bed isn't made and it needs to be made. And you can see that the dog bowl is empty and needs to be filled. You don't need somebody to tell you to wash the dishes, feed the dog, make your bed, and take out the garbage. Now, if you're one of those people that has to be told the obvious, then yes, I guess you can join the ranks of the unemployed. But it's not because there's any unemployment out there. Hey, I'm out of time, boys and girls. We're going to have to leave it right there. And let me remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. I got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.